This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Shug McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, the Pontiff of the Pick Four, back in our Lexington, Kentucky studios after a very busy week at Churchill Downs with Kentucky Derby 142. We do welcome everybody joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220 XM Channel 206 and everyone tuning in worldwide with our live streaming on your computer or your mobile device at horseracingradio.net. JT, how are you, my friend?
Good. I'm really good.
Bouncing back from that Kentucky Derby effort?
Yeah, it took me about 2 days to be ambulatory.
But it'll do that.
But after that, it was great. It was just a fantastic result, and our show was solid, and the windows were kind, and so it was good.
Your good friend Doug O'Neill picking up the victory aboard with Nyquist, Mario Gutierrez aboard. Really special win for him. Derby win number two after I'll Have Another in 2012.
Yeah, well, you know, Doug often tells me that he loves me, but this time I got it on tape.
He did say that after the race.
He did. That was so much fun to be able to watch the race from Mr. Redham's box and then, you know, get with Doug right afterwards. It was really, really entertaining. It was a great moment for Doug and for me, and just to be together in that moment was cool.
Well, I can tell you somebody else that Doug has a passion for and would tell you firsthand that he loves this guy. That is our guest on Trainer Talk this evening. He hails from a small Mexican town located on Mexico's west coast with a population of just over 13,000. He now works as the lead assistant for trainer Doug O'Neill, and he can proudly say that he has played a major role in conditioning two of the past four Kentucky Derby winners. Please welcome Leandro Mora to Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Leandro, happy to have you on board, my friend.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I'm glad to talk to you guys also.
Yeah, and congratulations on your second Kentucky Derby victory. That has a pretty good ring to it.
Oh, thank you. It's a thrill. Like I said, you know, if you guys hear a little bit of a scramble on my voice, it's because I'm just recovering from all the screaming. So, yes, I was whipping the horse more than Mario. I kind of apologize for that.
Take us through that stretch run by Nyquist.
Well, when I saw the first 22:45, I was looking to somebody next to me to say, "We're cooked. We're done. Going a mile and a quarter, seeing those fractions, 3-year-olds, the first 3-4 horses, they're pretty much die." And then when he went to the top of the stretch and passed another horse, oh boy, I started to melt and start screaming. And so that was it. Also, when the Excite Trader was coming, trying to catch up, I said, "Oh no, where's the wire? But it looks like on the gallop out after that, we just stay as he was. That means we still had a little bit left on.
Well, it must have been nice to be there for this one, because when I'll Have Another one in 2012, you had to stay back in California, right?
Yes, I had. We had one owner who really, really wanted either Doug or me to saddle his horse back in Hollywood Park. And I says, "Well, there is no way Doug is going to saddle your horse. So someone is going to have to, so that's me." And after that, we settled things up. You know, I was a little down because, you know, I waited 35 years for that Derby, and it could have been the only one. So it was not easy to take it.
Yeah, that's a little bit of talk about a difficult owner. That's not too kosher, especially for the Kentucky Derby. You got to be able to play the game a little bit.
Yes, indeed. Well, this gentleman, he was a new owner. He had no clue. He had probably didn't know the the importance and the thrill of how Kentucky Derby was going to be. He was, we had him for almost a year and a half, and he was coming from being a business person up to this, and he didn't realize how important that one was, probably.
So, Leandro, tell me about your Derby experience this year, since you did have the opportunity to be in attendance at Churchill Downs. Was it everything you thought it would be?
It was unbelievable to start with, and I couldn't have been a better horse than this. The experience was tremendous. You know, you had all the feelings, all the positives on yours, and a couple of people asked me, when are you going to go to Kentucky to oversee him? And then, as a matter of fact, two of my very good friends were involved in a horse racing. One is Tom Canoose. Once I stepped in Kentucky, he called me. He says, how's Nyquist? And I says, believe me, what I saw is as good as gold. And he says, once I hear you, he says, I feel more comfortable. So it makes me feel, you know, part of the team, that how things are going through.
Yeah, well, it's a very unique situation, Team O'Neill. You guys all have one another's backs, and you work together. There's no jealousy on the team. Everybody plays their role and does such a good job. It's really unique in our sport to have a situation like that.
Well, yes, we love each other, and then of course, if you have a good leader, it puts you in the place where you are and keeps everybody together. So our leader is Doug O'Neill, and he's the first one not to inject any jealousy. None of them. Yeah, we had no drama. And as long as we had no drama on our stable and jealousy towards us, it's very good for ourselves to take care of it. Because on our barn, even the one who's cleaning the office all the way up to the trainer is treated exactly the same. So there's no differences in there.
Leandro, what makes Doug such a good leader?
God, I don't know. He only went to high school, so I thought he went to some sort of psychologist study all the way to UC, but I don't see that. I guess he was born with a gift. He's just a great guy.
How did you first come in contact with Doug, and how did that relationship begin?
Well, my teacher, my pops, the guy who stopped me. I was already an assistant trainer with David Bernstein, got my license. And David had started to go low in horses, so I looked for something better, which was, I couldn't get anybody better than a horseman with his name, Brian Mayberry. And I stayed with Brian Mayberry for about 13 years until he passed, you know, and God took him away too soon. So once he passed, I was left out a little bit. So I worked previously for an English guy named Tim Pinchfield, and he kind of disappeared quick. He was looking towards to be in Europe instead, and I kind of want to follow him. So this veterinarian named Melinda Blue, she was working for Tim Pinchfield, and she says, look like a Doug O'Neill needs an assistant. And before I do anything, I went to talk to him. And I says, my name is Leandro Sonso, and I just, you know, I'm just disabled now in work, you know, because my papa is no longer here. He says, what do you think? He says, I know you. And he says, believe me, you got to start working with me as soon as possible. So he believed in me, and I trusted him. You know, I'm a loyal person. So once he trusted on me, we bonded. And that's like back in 2001.
Yeah, that's the way Doug is. He's not going to miss an opportunity like that to have someone of your skill and talent and background. I mean, I don't think people realize, you know, how many horses you've actually seen and taken care of in your years on the track. I mean, it's countless. And working for Brian Mayberry, who was, the king of two-year-olds, That's a huge advantage for Team O'Neill now that they buy so many horses at sales. To have you on board and your expertise with babies is invaluable.
Well, thank you for that. I pass on a little thing that I learned from Brian Mayberry, and the rest was from Doug, but we put it all together, and he's been making the right choices, and we all follow up with what we have to. And it's been paying off, and it couldn't have been on a better place, believe me. It's like I told all my buddies, they asked me about retirement. I said, I don't think I would, because if I would, I'm going to probably die right away, because that's my life. You're right about that.
Well, you know, Leandro, Doug is your boss, but you've also described him as being like your brother. Talk about that unique dynamic.
Well, he took me, first of all, as a worker, and finally he looked at me and we talked and about everything else, and everything that I talk about, he comes to me, and we all agree together, and then we start, you know, feeling into a family, and finally, anything that happens around both of our lives, he's involved, you know, and so I cannot describe the bigger the heart this guy has towards me, and it's just an unbelievable feeling. It's like, let's say, I think I better do some checking on my blood, because I'm probably from Ireland. I'm Mexican from Ireland, too. So that's what it is. The blood is on the blood, and then we love each other. He's a great guy to have.
Visiting with Leandro Mora, assistant trainer to Doug O'Neill, here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Leandro, I started the show by talking about your hometown in Mexico. And is it true that your hometown is actually the birthplace of mariachi music?
Exactly, it is. I was not raised there, but it is. Yeah. My father saw the very first pioneers of the music. And the first ones didn't even have shoes on. They had those, they call them huaraches, some sort of sandals. And they went to Mexico City to competition for mariachi music. The name was Mariachi Vargas. So that was, and they were born there. The music was born right there. But when the competition started, they had to go to Mexico with a few other musicians, and they won the whole thing. And I guess it's back in 1930s, somewhere back there. And so when how my father would tell me, it's unbelievable, but he used to tell me, you know, he passed. He says that those guys were so unique. I mean, they couldn't screw it up. They were like born together. So that's how the music, the mariachi, has been all over the world, because that's the heart of it.
And what's the name of the town?
The town is Tecalitlan, Jalisco. Tecalitlan, Jalisco. Yeah.
That's easy for you to say.
You notice how I didn't try to pronounce the name of the town?
Well, I just met that town. I never had seen it before, because I was raised up to age 16 at the state of Colima. That's different. I was raised in a tourist area. And my goal was to come to the States for two things. I was hired as a chef assistant, you know, learn how to cook. And then also I came with the goal of speak English. To learn English, so I could go back and be a translator for the tourist people where I was, you know, raised. Yeah, and a friend of mine took me to the horse racing at Pilmore, and we went to see quite a few races there, and I never left after that.
You got hooked.
I got hooked, especially, especially Seattle Blue just won the Triple Crown in the '77, and it was hot. That time, you know, about Seattle Zoo just finished winning the Triple Crown. I think it was, you know, in July after May. July. So, in the next year, when I stayed there, you will already know a firm came back and I said, oh, boy, we all thought it was easy. We never seen one after American Pharoah.
Did you know anything about horses or horse racing when you were growing up in Mexico, Leandro?
Yes. My dad had a filly that he bought her for crop, you know, just to work on the ranch on the crop, for, you know, growing whatever, because we have a small farm over there. We grow lemon, lots of lemons. We have a big field of lemons. And also he bought it just to open up a little piece of land to put corn. And this filly, I tried to match race in a couple of times, and then she won 11 on her own match racing on Sundays. So that was a hookup, and we started to love it. So it kind of disappeared a little bit when I was hired differently to do whatever. But when I stepped in here and I saw these majestic animals, they were twice as high than my filly. Our filly was, you know, those Aztecs. The Aztecs are little, they're like Shetland ponies almost. And I saw it. I said, hell no, I ain't going to leave this guy. This is the best place.
So it was really the love of the horses that got you into the game.
Oh, definitely. With no doubt. Yeah, so this. I could not believe it because I have never seen these horses that beautiful in my entire life. I saw them in the calendars and sometimes on TV, but I always thought it would have been just you may change it on camera to make it look that good. No, I was wrong.
Wow. So what goes through your mind then, Leandro, when you think about where you started competing in those match races and now being involved with two Kentucky Derby winners? What goes through your mind when you think about that?
Well, it goes like when you go to school and you study for so many years until you become a lawyer and win a case. That's my comparison. You win a good case and you're proud of yourself that you studied for 20 years and become a good lawyer and then try to save a guy like O.J. Simpson. I'm not kidding, but one of those guys. and then he says, well, this is what I done. It's like the goal of something that shit, you know, like you went through it. Actually, I was a hard worker at the backside, and I never gave up. I was working for Gary Jones for about 7-8 months, and I saw with my own eyes that I was not going to move up in that barn because the youngest groom in that barn already had 10 years of working there, so there was no chance. So I started to move out, try to see if I can move up the ladder. So I always had my ambition to become somebody in life.
Well, you've certainly done that. Leandro Mora on Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton. I want to go back to something you mentioned just a few moments ago, Leandro, when you said one of your stated goals when you came to the United States was to learn English. And John Velasquez has repeatedly told us on this show that one of the ways that he went about learning English was to watch The Little Mermaid, and he learned from watching TV. How about yourself? How did you learn?
Cartoons.
Really?
Cartoons. Yeah, cartoons.
I guess cartoons are the key.
I was watching cartoons, and after watching cartoons, I watched every single one. Yes, like Hawaii Five-O, Chips, you know, Chips, in Wild Wild West, Love Lucy. Those, I was watching every single one until I picked it up. I couldn't understand a word of it, but once it comes into your head, you keep recording whatever they were talking, and once you come up in a real life and somebody talks in English and you pick that up from what you see on TV. But actually, cartoon was my starter.
How did you know that you were learning the right words to go along with the pictures you were seeing on the screen?
You put them all together. You know, you put them all together. When somebody says a table, and then you're starting to hurt the grass on it, and then, of course, when it's written on them by hand, it's differently. But when somebody read it right in front of my eyes and says table, and I pick it up and keep it in there. And also, one other thing, when you're starting to talk, you go to a restaurant, you go to an ice cream parlor, and you ask, and they laugh at you, but then I laugh because they're having a joke, because they don't know, they think, they know that you're making a mistake, and they string you up, and then what I did, I was not embarrassed. Every time they straight myself, I keep it. Now, let's say when I said chicken, I say differently, and the one in front of me, you know, got me right and smiling, and I didn't get embarrassed. Like said, oh, he's laughing at me. That's what I tell all my buddies. Don't think they're having fun of you. They're trying to make sure you do the talk exactly as it's supposed to be.
Yeah, so you have to kind of.
That's how I got it.
You got to check your ego a little bit and be more open to what to people's
exactly.
Help.
Exactly. No, my ego went way too far. I went to Moravian High School for about, I would say, 2 months just to put things together at night. Moravian High at night. And once I got it, in 2 months, I started, you know, when, you know, like you couldn't go. You know, the racetrack juice is not easy. You go at night to school, and then you have to get up before him to work. It was never easy.
Yeah.
So I did it for a short time until I put my things together, and yes, that's how it went also.
Yeah, the racetrack life is very difficult because you're up early, and sometimes you have to stay late if you run in a late race or whatever, and then add school to that. You don't get home till 10 or maybe even later, and then And then you got to start again at 4:30, so it's pretty tough.
Definitely.
Leandro, how about your children? You have, what, two boys? Is that right?
I got two boys. One works for me. His name is Robert. I named him after the singer from Brazil, Roberto Carlos.
Mm-hmm.
That singer is 73 years old, and he still performs, the greatest guy in the world in Brazil. He still does it all over the world. And he is starting to become a computer, graphic computers, all kinds of things. And he's a year and a half to finish. He's attending UC Long Beach, and he's also working for me. And the other one wants to be a math teacher. So he's going to Rancho Cucamonga Community College. So both are doing their good grades, and I'm happy for that.
So they're not going to follow in your footsteps and be a horse trainer?
Well, I won't underestimate the older one, the one who is about to graduate. He's already getting into it heavy. He knows the importance of horse racing. So eventually, I don't want to say anything because I want him to do whatever he feels like it. But I could feel and see he's going to be on the racetrack.
He's got it in his blood.
Yeah, he's on it. Yeah.
Leandro, what's the best thing about being a horse trainer?
It's a great feeling. Also, it's very, very important. And also, one thing I got to tell you. You have a nice horse in training, and then you have 20 or 30 other horses on your side. You know, what makes you feel good, if you go to horses training and that doesn't give you hiccups or headaches, there is a horse who's giving you hiccups or headaches, and you move a little bit and they concentrate on that one, even having a nice horse, but you're still working on your little horse, and that's a great achievement once your little horse comes and wins a race from not thinking because he didn't have to. He was not healthy, he couldn't eat, or a few other things. So that makes a good trainer be a good trainer, and that's a great achievement. So that's what I always do. Even if we have Nyquist, my mind is always sitting on one or two horses who really need people's help and things to get them better.
You know, we've had a lot of trainers on the show, but we've never had anybody explain it like that. But I think that's an interesting concept. Like if you have a good horse in the barn, it elevates every other horse in the barn.
Exactly. Yes. So that's those are good things to happen. And like I said, you have to sometimes, because you put all your power on one horse, it's a great thing to do, but you overachieve horse, and then if you keep doing it, you find a lot of things that you don't want to find. So you just got to follow up what you're doing.
Tell me about a couple of those horses, Leandro, that you've done some pretty good work with. Maybe not even the big name horses, but some of the other ones that have stood out to you and they've turned out to be okay.
Well, one was Skywalker. I mean, not Skywalker. Not Skywalker. The great horse that we won the Gold Cup with.
Skywalker would have been pretty good.
No, Skywalker was the greatest Cup winner.
He would have been okay.
You know, he would have been great. No, with that horse was very good. Also, one was Avanzado.
Mm-hmm.
And the third one was Are You Talking to Me? Are You Talking to Me was a horse that we claimed from Mike Mitchell. He gave up on the horse because he couldn't break 49 work on him. He could not work 3/4 and 1/16. He always do 1/18. When we claim him, he was exactly the same. He never changed, no nothing. We find out that this horse was lazy in the mornings, lazy completely. And he had a couple hiccups. We didn't fix much of it. But once we learned that, we put him up in company. And then he does that type of horse that was winning going in 1/8. The winner are going in the Breeders' Cup. And the best one of all, the love of my love, and the one who is going to be on our lives forever, calls his love of me. Yeah, that horse we claim him. And the owner thought he could have been a regular horse. We were going to try the Pomona Derby because he was 3-year-old. He was there. And we thought the race was going to be tough just for him. So we went through Pomona with him, And he was a horse who really, really, really was very, very nervous. You know, shaky, nervous, and stuff like that. So once we had him in there, and he ran a couple of good races, I had to believe on him. He had a bad feet. We worked on his feet, and then also we worked on his nervous. He was a horse. Anything that he was noise, it would hurt him. So we tried to put him away with there was no noise, period. And then even Doug, he didn't have him. He left him at Sarania on the second string, and I told him, Doug, I think we have the best horse you've ever seen in your life. Get out of here. So believe me. So we moved him to Hollywood Park and start blooming since. And that's why when we travel with that horse, even when we ran on the Breeders' Cup in Kentucky, being in Kentucky is not easy for the, you know, so much people and there and noise and stuff like that. And then you have to have a very professional horse and your brains and well set up on your brains to come up to the track and do what you can. That's why you might have a very nice horse, the best of the world, and not perform well on the Kentucky Derby, because that noise, the whole thing around it can kill 30% or sometimes 40% of their fitness in there.
Talking with Leandro Mora here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, assistant trainer to two-time Kentucky Derby winner Doug O'Neill, which means that Leandro also a two-time Kentucky Derby winning trainer, and great to have him on board with us here this evening. Leandro, only about a minute left. We have to get to a commercial break. The name of the horse you were trying to think of, was it Skyjack?
Skyjack. Yeah. I was going to say, think about it, Skyjack. Yep. I don't know why I was looking on the sky of Skywalker, because I was probably watching Star Wars about a couple hours ago.
he was by Skywalker, Skyjack. But...
He was by that stallion, yeah, Skyjack. What a nice horse he was. He was a great achievement.
Yeah, won the 2002 Hollywood Gold Cup and then the Long Acres Mile right after that, too. So.
Yes, and that horse had serious problems. He even had a colic, and we have to cut like almost 2 feet of gut. When you cut 2 feet of gut to save a horse's life and put it all together and start training, you don't expect a horse like that to extend and do what you can after being a decent horse. For he was a decent caliber, he didn't have to win those races yet. So when he came back and then we did all that, that's when you feel, God, we got something right on this guy. Yeah.
Well, you've done things right with a lot of horses, Leandro, and we're going to talk more about that in the second half of the program. It comes up next. Stay with us on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. In 2015, the Fasig Tipton selected yearling sales outperformed all major North American yearling sales. The July sale held in Lexington, Kentucky is annually a top-ranked yearling sale by percentage of greatest stakes winning graduates and saw 15 sires represented by their highest-priced colt or filly in 2015. The prestigious Fasig Tipton Saratoga sale posted an increased average of over $322,000 while boasting a remarkably low RNA rate of just 15% and was tremendously strong in the middle market with a higher percentage of horses sold in the $100,000 to $300,000 range than book one of the Keeneland September sale. The New York bred sale in Saratoga produced 50 yearlings of $100,000 or higher with an increased average of more than $81,000. The Fasig Tipton selected yearling sales. Superior results. Visit FasigTipton.com.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at BloomRacing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best. And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
They're off in New York. the premier state bred program in the United States. When you own a New York bred, your horse can run for more than $44 million in purses restricted to registered New York breds. And the New York program pays awards to breeders, owners, and stallion owners when their New York breds finish first, second, or third at New York tracks. We have the quality.
Day at the spa, all the way.
You have the opportunity. New York breds, get with the program. The best program.
Don't miss your opportunity to attend the next Thoroughbred Owner Conference being held at Santa Anita Park, October 31st through November 3rd, the same week of the 2016 Breeders' Cup Championships. Enjoy a great lineup of speakers and topics, plus be part of the post-position draw for the Breeders' Cup Classic, as well as the Breakfast Marquee and Clocker's Corner. And to cap it all off, your conference registration also includes reserved grandstand seating for both days of the Breeders' Cup. The Thoroughbred Owner Conference, October 31st through November 3rd, at Santa Anita. Register now at ownerview.com.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And they're into the stretch, and it's Nyquist. Nyquist has taken the lead on the outside. Gunrunner, second at the rail. 5 lengths back to Destin in third. And they come to the final furlong. Exaggerator is closing in. Nyquist to catch with a 16th to go. Gunrunner, Exaggerator on the outside. Nyquist and Exaggerator, they're coming to the line together. And Nyquist is still unbeaten. He has won the Kentucky Derby. Exaggerator was second, and then a photo for third among sudden breaking news. And Gunrunner, and the final time was swift. 2:01.31.
Little trip down memory lane for our special guest tonight on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. That is Leandro Mora, and we do welcome everybody back to the show. Mike Pennett, Jude Feld, and really enjoyed the first half of the program. If you did miss any portion of this show, you can go back and listen to this podcast and all of our Trainer Talk shows at horseracingradio.net, and you can take us with us, with you, wherever you may be.
Yeah, and also on iTunes.
Yes, that's right, too. A lot of ways to access the Horse Racing Radio Network.
And we get cards and letters and emails and phone calls from people to saying how much they enjoy the Trainer Talk shows. And, of course, we always say it's the show that trainers listen to because they do. They want to catch up on their competition. So it's great to be able to do these interviews. I really enjoy doing them, and I know a lot of people enjoy listening to them.
I have thoroughly enjoyed the first half of this program and really looking forward to the second half. That call by Larry Colmus of Nyquist winning the Kentucky Derby on that first Saturday in May. Leandro Mora was there. He wasn't there in 2012 for I'll Have Another, but he was there for Nyquist this year. And as you described in the first half of the show, Leandro, a gigantic thrill for you and for the entire Doug O'Neill team.
Good. Everything is good. I got to come up with something funny that happens in the Kentucky Derby. Do I have time to say it?
Sure. Of course.
Okay. I was walking out, celebrating, screaming like usual, like everybody does when you know, that's the best race of the world. And then suddenly, my girlfriend was, sobbing right on the grand, the bottom. And I didn't only have one pass, so she didn't have one. So I touched with her, and the guy said, she has no pass. She has to get out of here. So I said, well, my girlfriend said, okay, keep her with you, but do not move. I was standing with her when the flower guy come up and gave me the whole bunch of flowers. He says, I have to do some work. I got two things to do. As soon as you see Paul Venom, can you give it to him? So actually, I became the flower man all the way until the winner's circle. I was carrying a bunch of bouquets of flowers, so I didn't have a chance to go greet the horse and everybody. So that's why I don't say I missed that, but I became the flower person for the next 10-15 minutes, I guess.
Well, it's sometimes it's quite an honor to be the flower person, and it's one of those things where after the Derby it turns into kind of a zoo. I mean, there's people running everywhere and all kinds of things going on, and it's a tremendously unique experience. So at least the guy was kind enough to let your girlfriend go with you.
Oh, he did. That was nice of him. Because they were blocking just about everyone going through. So that was pretty cool. The guy saw me, and he definitely believed in me. He might have recognized one of us right there.
Leander, what's it like making that walk over to the paddock area from the barn area?
If, thank God, my heart was pumping real good and a couple of drinks of red wine. Otherwise, your legs melt, to be honest. Yeah, that's the best walk you ever had. You mean, you just compare it. Can I compare it? It's like, let's say, oh, my God, I don't know how to compare it. Let's say you just like the next president, whoever becomes, and they're going to do the first walk away. That's the feeling of it.
How about my old Kentucky home? Was that emotional when they played that?
It make you cry. It make you cry. And then they started out when we were, like, I think it was the second horse when they started out. And when we come up with the 13, it was just about ending. Oh, my God. You know, the skin turns in like a chicken. The hair goes up. It's an unbelievable feeling.
Well, that unbelievable feeling continuing after Nyquist won the Kentucky Derby. He is now at Pimlico getting ready for the second leg of the Triple Crown, the Preakness. You, of course, Leandro, are back in California. Jack Sisterson, who was on this program a couple of weeks ago, is with Nyquist in Baltimore. From your perspective, sitting back there in California, there's not much you can do with him at this point. Are you in constant contact with Jack, or how does that work?
Oh, he is brilliant. Like all the English guys are, he's brilliant. Every morning he texts me about his Nyquist whereabouts and how he does, how he feels, how he eats. And he's a good guy to have. You know, Jack, you know, came into our group, and we're not going to let him go unless he wants to do something else on his life. He's a good guy, so he's always in touch with Doug and me. And we're all agreeing the things that was going on. And we enjoy a bit of it. So he's a good guy to have.
Will you be making the trip to Baltimore?
Yes. Looks like we are leaving on the 18th. And, of course, you know, I'm taking advantage of my senior niece. How do you call them? The senior assistant now. So I'm letting the young guy doing the hard labor and just go do the little things. Like, just show off.
Yeah, good man. That's the right approach. So because of the fact that Fasig Tipton is the title sponsor of this program, we want to draw attention to this one fact, Leandro, and that's the fact that Nyquist was selected as a two-year-old in training at the Florida sale at Gulfstream Park here. What was Nyquist like as a young horse when you first gotten him?
You know, when he come up, now I got to come up and say something. He come up to the barn and we were told by Dennis, and Dennis says, I pay this amount of money, and this horse will leave me. He says, he's a good horse to have. I look at him, and once he stepped into the barn, he rolled, looked at us, and he was playing like he's been there forever. And once you see a smart horse, you just cannot change it. You know, one horse just like him who got hurt too soon was Stevie Wonder Boy. When he walked into the stall, you immediately know what you have. Okay, that horse was working ordinary works, was galloping ordinary gallops. I walk into the starting gate to start teaching him, and I told Mike Sherlock, I said, Mike, this horse is going to give you guys your Delmar money, your Delmar expenses, your Delmar rent. How do you know? Believe me, no expectations, was not working fast, no nothing. When the horse wanted Omar, Mike wanted to kill Jack Sisterson. Damn, Mario, Leandro, give me the horse, and you told me it was not that good. So on that one, I was right, because that horse, I mean, he's like a car. You step on the paddle, he goes 10 miles or 6 if you want him to do. But he's not the type of horse that he wants to go run off or jump here and there, nothing like that. It's unbelievable. Believe me, that's out of the ordinary. There's not much to do in there and changes.
When you were watching the Kentucky Derby, when did you know you had it won?
God, when he went by that horse, I think it was the quarter pole, and he was gone. And when I saw Mario looking back, I said, we are winning. because Mario did not press yet. He did not push it. He was looking to see if anybody's coming close. Mario is starting to be, he doesn't like to beat up horses. You've seen Mario ride all the time, and you don't see the Mario that one of those severe jockeys who go all the way until the horse drop. The Mario does this very, very smart thing when he has a horse. If he thinks he's got a lot of horse and knows nobody's catching up, he doesn't try as much to kill the horse, to do whatever he has to. So that when I saw Mario looking back, I said, we're gone. So that's what it is.
Yeah, it really seemed like he saved a little bit at the end for next weekend, you know?
Exactly. I don't think he was thinking about the second race, but he really was looking on who he's getting close. If nobody comes, I ain't going to kill this guy.
Well, let's hope he's looking back at the 16th pole as well when he gets to the 16th pole in Baltimore. That would be kind of nice to see him glance back and know that you have that one wrapped up too and on your way to Belmont for another try at the Triple Crown. And boy, what redemption that would be if indeed you could pull it off after what happened with I'll Have Another before he attempted that Triple Crown and never got the opportunity.
Well, let's hope he wins it, because this is not going to be easy. I oversee or heard that the majority of horses are coming. I think about 6 horses from the Derby are coming to challenge us. And one other horse, Cherry Wine, is coming to run against us too. Also, Ancolino is coming, the other Ancomo horse coming over. But it will win it. It will win it. The chances are going to be very, very big, because he gave us a little more time. I know a mile and a half is brutal, but so far I haven't seen no other horse that's that distance than the only one that I see right now with my own eyes is Exaggerator.
You know, speaking of Exaggerator, right after the race, Kent DeSormo joined us on the coverage, and he said, I had a little bit of traffic trouble, and if both Nyquist and Exaggerator run in the Preakness, Nyquist won't beat Exaggerator. Threw down the gauntlet, Leandro.
Well, that happens on the San Vicente. I heard that exactly the same thing, and we beat him. So we beat him. I love Kid DeSormo, but I think we still beat him.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you one thing that I read some quotes from both Keith and Kent a couple days after the Derby, and they had nothing but respect for Nyquist. I think they're tired of seeing his big rear end going away from him.
Well, that's what we did with Land Oversea. We were getting our butt kicked by Sunburn. We were second to her 3 times in 1/3. So the heck with it. We can't beat her. Let's go somewhere else. That's why we went to Louisiana, and we wrapped it up, even the points and the right to run in the Kentucky Oaks. And then a little bit of a luck, we could have won them both, but she ran a great second, and we cannot be more happier than that.
Longtime assistant trainer to Doug O'Neill, Leandro Mora, our special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Leandro, I want to kind of turn the clock back to 2012 here for a minute, and it was August of 2012 that Doug had to serve a 40-day suspension, so he turned over his entire operation to you, which spoke volumes about your relationship. What did it mean to have Doug show you so much trust and faith that you could handle things while he was gone?
Well, that'll tell you that he is a man of trust. He believes in me. And so we went on with that. And also, he got all of his honors because he puts me next to him when he's talking to them. So every one of his owners were all confident. When you have your client confident, your trainer is confident that he can take some vacations and your assistant follows up because they know they're not going to have any differences of what has been done prior on O'Neill's way of train and run horses. The only one who underestimated was Rene Douglas. I love her for that. He kind of underestimated Leandro Mora, and then he moved the horse that we have with him, Private Zone, to someone else because he even told Doug, he says, well, you're getting days off, and I don't believe Leandro can handle it. So when I won the British Cup with Golden Sands, believe me, that was the best thing ever happened to us and I even called my friend Rene Douglas and his help. Listen, If you don't believe in me, I'll accept it as a professional, but don't underestimate me. I'm going to prove you guys that I'm doing exactly what Doug would love to do when he was here, and there's not going to be any differences.
Well, that's some pretty good smack talk.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful, Leandro. And yeah, you're right. You were vindicated. That win with Golden Sense was spectacular. We were there that day. He ran out of his bridle. How much different is it when you're the guy calling the shots? How much different is it when you're the guy in charge and you're the guy calling all of the shots?
Well, it's a good thrill. It's a good thing about it. But pretty much, you know, I tried to do like the man who was the king of horses in California, with his name was Charlie Winningham. If you talk too much to a jockey, you screw him up. If you say a very little to a jockey before the race, or any type of race, including any good races, it's way better. So you just don't give as much instruction to a guy so you don't confuse him. And especially when a guy is riding the horse for 3, 4, 5 times, and then he also reads the form. So all you got to do is where you would like to be, and if the jockey agrees with you and you agree with the jockey, says, okay, let's do that. But if it doesn't happen, we can do this, and that's it.
Well, you know, Charlie was a man of few words, but Shoemaker rode most of his horses, and that helped a lot. And you guys have such a great relationship with Mario Gutierrez. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, we have a great relationship with Mario Gutierrez, and also I have to respect all the connections, especially Mr. Redham. Mr. Redham is one. But I cannot separate him. I cannot put him under any other owner of the world. To me, I think he's on top of all the owners, with no doubt, because not one owner in history, if when Mario took a little bit of a down, not one owner will stick with it. We had him, we were using him, he was riding for us, he had just a little bit down, and that was a little, you get a little desperate. You know, that happened with Steve Carlton. Steve Carlton went down too much after a big thing, and then as hard as you try, you kind of overdo your horse and move it too soon or too late. And then that's what happens. And Mr. Redham, he was one heck of a guy. Says, we're going to go all the way. And then one guy asked Mr. Redham. He says, why don't you take this guy off of it? Did that guy want the Kentucky Derby for me? That was the answer. I don't remember who the hell asked him. He says, what? You know? Then, so with Mario, has been a great guy. He's done super. He's got way, way better. He uses his brains exactly what he's supposed to be. And then, like it happens in any sport, like I just told you, sometimes we try to overdo it and things don't go as well. But here we go. Now he is back, and I won't take him off for any reason if I was the trainer or the owner. There's no way.
There is just no words to describe except for flawless, that ride that he put on Nyquist in the Kentucky Derby. It was an absolutely perfect ride.
Yeah, even in the land overseas. He was way on the back. That wasn't supposed to happen. He was supposed to be like a lane 3 or 4. You know, we didn't get the luck that we expected on, and she was way back, and he waited and waited and waited. He didn't try to be 3 or 4 like the talk was that early on, and then save it, and then he finished second. Otherwise, it would have been a disaster.
Yeah, well, he certainly made all the right moves, and hoping to make all the right moves in Baltimore as well here in a couple of weeks when he gets there for the Preakness Stakes. You know, it's interesting. We were talking about Leandro taking over the reins for Doug when he had to serve that suspension there back in 2012. Your very first day on the job, Leandro, you get word that you're going to get a horse from the Bob Baffert barn that was recently purchased and transferred over to you. But it wasn't just any horse. It was 2-time Pacific Classic winner Richard's Kid. How is that for taking over the reins and breaking in on your very first day?
Wow, that was a good call, yeah. And yeah, we overheard it, and I didn't believe until I saw the horse in the stable. And sometimes it took a little bit of drama. It took a little bit of a drama between the buffers and us because they didn't want to let the horse go. Yeah, so it was purchased for I don't remember what the money was then, And so we kind of look at each other like, oh, God, they didn't blame me for nothing. I was just the guy in training. So when I saw the horse, I said, oh, God, it's nice to have him. But I had to see Bob and his wife and, you know, company on their faces, and I didn't know what to say. As a matter of fact, my sister's husband gallops that horse, and it's also family related, and I couldn't see him on his face either until things started come, you know, unveil, and we'll find out how the deal was done, and I was happy to have him.
Yeah, and it worked out pretty well, of course, for the O'Neill Barn. Leandro Mora, our special guest here on Trainer Talk. Leandro, last year in September, you had what was described as a minor stroke. And I'll tell you this, I've said this to several people, there is no such thing as a minor stroke. I guess the only minor stroke would be the one that happens on somebody else. No such thing as minor when this happens. You were at home when all this happened. Tell me how you first realized that something wasn't right.
Well, I was watching TV when I felt like an earthquake on my head, like somebody hit me with a baseball bat, and I hit the ground. And I called my girlfriend. I said, I'm in trouble. When she came up, I was on the ground. She put me on the sofa, and I fell off the sofa, and everything was spinning. I thought I was food poisoned. So I told her, I said, let's call the ambulance, because I think I ate something smothered. I never realized it was something else worse. So when the ambulance, came up and took me over, they had to tie me to the carrier bed over the ambulance, because I was falling off the ambulance bed also. So that was a bad thing. So I don't want to wish any of those things to anyone or my friends, anyone in particular. I have to give credit to my girlfriend, because she was the only one here and called 911. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't be talking. You know, if I would have made it alive, I would have been the next day completely as a vegetable. It would have been too late.
That's a very frightening thing, and you've recovered so nicely from it. I know you told us during the break that soccer helped you a lot with that, and the fact that you rebounded so fast. Why don't you talk about that?
Yes, I've been playing soccer. And then I don't do much over the runner, but I still do plenty, because I'm a goalkeeper. And I was still playing like about 2 months before that happens to me. So the nurses and the doctor back in the hospital, they told me, they said, believe me, if you wasn't that fit, you wouldn't have been like you are right now. He says, look on your left side. There was another gentleman next to me who was really in best shape. So even 3 days later, when Doug and Steve and Jack went to visit me, the next day, as a matter of fact, I was way, way better. I could talk, you know, a little slobbery, but I was great. So they said, oh, it looks like you didn't have anything. So thank God. So I was coming back right away. And the doctor told me the next morning, he says, if the clot that you have stuck on the back of your head doesn't go through, we're going to have to operate you. So that's why I stayed there for almost about a week. And master went through, because after a few MRIs, they released me.
Yeah, you mentioned being lucky. You were so lucky that Doug thought it was appropriate that he should buy you some lottery tickets, because you were going so good. Did you win?
I won a bunch of tickets. And he's even gonna start scratching them up, and if we win the Millions, we'll split it. So you're on. No, that was good. The luck came up after that. If you already know now that what we're talking about, I said, God left me for a reason, especially not only this. He doesn't only select one person, but I guess I take it as it is. He left me for something, and I'm hoping to win the next two, and that might be the reason why I'm here.
How has that experience changed your life, Leandro?
In my life?
Yeah, how has that experience, going through something like that, how does it change your outlook on life?
Okay. It's been a big change, a huge change. I don't get as nervous like the poor Sarge, you know, when he wins the race. I try to get a little less. And I'm seeing life way better perspective, way, way better. And you see like, you know, the next day or any day that you live is the best day of your life, the best day of your life, and then on and on. So, and then you get prepared. It's weird. But if you get prepared, you just say, well, if that happens to me next, I already enjoyed this in the past. That's how good it comes into your brain. And then before then, you think nothing's going to happen to you. You just keep on pushing it. And I don't think it's the right thing, but so it changed a lot. I became more mellow. I've never been a completely tough person, but I became a better guy.
Yeah, well, it's nice that you can relax a little bit and enjoy this ride and be a big part of it when you were so close to either not being here at all or maybe being taken out of the game altogether. So couldn't be happier because you've certainly put in your hours before and now, as you said, you get paid for what you know, not what you do.
Exactly. No, it's good way of thinking. You know, they're thinking all positive, and also you want to leave something good for whoever is behind you. I know the only people they talk about are for many years are mostly movie stars or whoever, but at least you're going to leave something for your family to remember you as what you did on the few years of your life. So that's what I'm working on right now, and that's going to be it, I believe.
Leandro, only about a minute or so left before we do have to wrap things up. Been a great visit. How do you want to be remembered in this sport and in life?
I want to be remembered as one of the assistant trainers who did not ambition to become a super trainer or a big trainer in life. Because we're all our assistant trainers. A lot of them jumped with train horses. But a lot of them, we love what we do. It's not because we don't get the luck to jump up to a second stage. I love what I do. So I want to remember one of the assistant trainers who are being good at what he's done and then good with his people and good, you know, with his employers.
Leandro Mora here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. Leandro, we want to wish you all the best, not only personally but professionally as well, and all the best with Nyquist going down this road to the Triple Crown. Good luck in Baltimore.
Thank you very much, and let's go all the way, buddy.
Let's go do it. Leandro Mora here on Trainer Talking. And JT, like all of our guests who appear on the program, he's going to receive a gift courtesy of one of our sponsors. It's Flair Equine Nasal Strips. If you noticed, when Nyquist crossed that finish line, he was wearing that white Flair strip. Yeah.
The white Flair strip and the red shadow roll. The colors of the Detroit Red Wings.
How cool is that?
There you go.
Yeah, very cool. All right, our thanks to Leandro Mora for joining us here tonight. Don't forget, if you missed any portion, go to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this program. All of our shows are up there for you to listen to at your leisure. And, of course, Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Good stuff. A great visit. Man, yeah. What a good guy.
Yeah, Leandro's terrific. Yep. Been friends for long time, longer than we care to admit.
One of the good guys in the sport of thoroughbred racing, for sure. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. We will talk to you next time on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton.